They've certainly been going at it in the nation's capital in the last week, and that's President Trump and Elon Musk. We have a lot to talk about, and kind enough to join us, one of our political analysts, my good friend for over 20 years with me here on the morning show, and that's Dr. John Green, professor of political science, University of Akron. John, how do you look at the Trump-Musk, let's say, family feud?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. A lot of, a lot of analysts believed that bromance, as they called it, that close connection between Musk and Trump was going to come apart at some point. You have two people with really big egos, very thin skins, and very clear ideas about how, you know, the government and the country should go. I'm a little bit surprised it lasted as long as it did, frankly, because the men have, you know, they have a common agenda around certain issues, but clearly they disagree on a whole bunch of other things. And so, you know, I think it kind of all came to head with Musk's work on the, you know, Department of Government Efficiency, which I think produced some really good ideas, but also, of course, a lot of political controversies. And that ended up, you know, with some tensions with Trump, and then things got out of hand.
And do you think the thing that upset the apple cart at the end of the day was the, quote, big, beautiful bill, and certainly didn't favor Elon Musk and his company?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that, you know, part of the focus of Elon's work in the White House was to cut the budget. And, you know, the budget, the big, beautiful bill isn't cutting the budget enough, you know, for him. But also, some of the cuts that are going to happen had to do with things like electric vehicles and space exploration and technology development, you know, the businesses that he's in. So I think there was a personal interest there as well as some ideological concerns.
With us is Dr. John Green, professor of political science, University of Akron. And boy, there are a whirlwind type of topics to touch on, right, involving President Trump these days, John. We can talk to FEMA going to be phased out, China, United States supposedly reaching some sort of trade deal. We'll probably hear more about that, but nothing more important right now than what's going on in Los Angeles. President Trump bringing in the California National Guard there with these ICE protests. The governor of California saying, hey, we don't necessarily need that. Trump says we do. So give us your perspective on how you're looking at the situation in Los Angeles right now.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, and we have to put in a little bit of history here. Remember, during President Trump's first term, we had all of the disturbances and riots having to do with the unfortunate killing of George Floyd up in Minnesota. And at that time, the Trump administration, you know, people thought about maybe deploying the National Guard, and they didn't. And so they seemed, and President Trump seems to have come to the conclusion that you have to respond quickly to these kinds of disturbances. Now, whether he's right or wrong, you know, only history will tell. But, of course, part of the problem here are Trump's own policies. You know, he's gone, you know, very aggressively with ICE on enforcing illegal immigration, particularly illegal immigrants who are connected to other kinds of illegalities, right? Drug smuggling and other types of crime. And the polls show that, well, generally the public's skeptical of many things that Trump is trying to do. That's one thing they tend to agree on. But, of course, this is a big issue in a big city like Los Angeles or Houston or Chicago, where there's really some difficult, intense disagreements around these issues. So, you know, and I suspect when the history of this period is written, we'll see that people wanted this confrontation. And people on the ground in California, but also the Trump administration, was happily to up the ante. So hence the deployment of the National Guard.
It's interesting, right, John, when we talk about immigration, the topic, and that was at the forefront of the Trump campaign. But when you look at it, you hear a lot about ICE and you hear a lot about deportation. But really, the numbers, when you talk about immigration and turning people away at the border and sending them back, aren't that substantial to what you might think in reading some of the numbers that are coming out of that.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think the biggest change with between the Biden administration and the second Trump administration was that the numbers of people trying to cross the border, either legally as refugees or illegally as, you know, just people wanting to cross the border, has gone down substantially. So I think there have been some big policy changes there. And, you know, I think focusing on criminals, quote unquote, is probably good politics, since very few people like crime in one form or another. But there is a bigger issue, which is there are a large number of people in the United States who, for one reason or another, don't have the appropriate government documents. Now, they're not one group of people, right? There is a diverse group. And it's a very large number of people. We might be talking 10 million folks, but they're not engaged in crime, right? They're just trying to, you know, live good lives, lead better lives, and contribute to our society. So on the one hand, the border's quieter than it used to be, and that's good news. On the other hand, the sort of bigger issue of this large productive population hasn't been addressed yet.
John, let's get into the world of trade and tariffs. Supposedly, U.S. and China officials meeting in London have some sort of trade agreement, which is good to hear, but then you hear more about the tariffs and then that they might remain in place for now. So what are you hearing on that front as far as these trade wars and specifically involving the U.S. and China?
Well, you know, the U.S.-China relationship is one of the most important relationships in the world right now. For economic reasons, you know, both countries sort of need each other, but both countries are very aggressive, you know, under the current Chinese leadership, but now under President Trump and pursuing their national interests. But then, of course, they're geopolitical issues. China has aspirations to becoming a big military, and, you know, it is the biggest peer competitor with the United States. So, you know, a lot of controversy with trade, but this is the central one. And, you know, I think that both the president of China and the president of the United States would like to come to some kind of accommodation that would benefit both countries. Whether they can pull that off or not, or to what extent they can pull it off, remains to be seen. It does seem that there's been some real progress on some strategic issues like American computer chips and rare minerals from China, but there's a lot more to trade than those things. So it'll be interesting to see if they can actually work something out. I think we're in a big pause right now, and everybody's holding their breath to see what happens next.
Yeah, and what I really worry about, and computer chips is obviously big, but I worry about the American farmer, John, right, that has all these crops, and a lot of people don't understand that when we're exporting our crops, whether it's corn, grain, what it might be, China was the biggest client, and all of a sudden China has signed some deals with some other countries for those needs. So you worry about, and there's many American farmers right here in our state in Ohio.
I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, one of the things a lot of people don't realize is how much of our exports are things like food, but also lumber and oil and other raw materials. You know, we're a very advanced industrial society, but a lot of the trade that we do is still in the basic stuff of life. And that's extremely important to our economy. And people don't realize, you know, there are a lot of hungry people in the world that would like to eat American corn and American beef. But there are alternatives. And, you know, when you start pushing around tariffs, people look for alternatives. So there's a lot at stake in these negotiations.
With us is Dr. John Green, professor of political science at the University of Akron, with us here on WAKR. You know, you were talking about military, and then we have a big military parade happening in the nation's capital. I just got to scratch my head a little bit because we're talking about cutting costs and trying to be slimmer in the nation's capital, but then we're going to put on this multi-million dollar military parade, something that you might see in Russia or North Korea. And I'm just trying to scratch my head and trying to figure out why we're going to do this parade. And again, you know, President Trump trying to, I think, show the rest of the world where we are. But talk about the military parade, John, and how you perceive this.
Well, you know, it's really, really kind of interesting. You know, one of the things about President Trump is he's the master of images. You don't have to agree with him to recognize that, you know, he knows how to get a lot of attention and to deploy symbols very powerfully. And, you know, the reason that there are military parades all over the world are partly because they exalt the nation. It's, everybody can feel good about security and the strength of their country because look how strong the military is. But also, of course, this has a diplomatic function, which is to show the world, yeah, our military is strong. So I think there's a lot of symbolism going here, and spectacles are a good way to promote symbols, but they're expensive, to have these big parades. So I think this is part of the nationalism of Trump, and he sees this, of course, as good politics.
John, you pay close attention to polls and numbers. I love that about you. You're a stat guy, kind of like I am. What are the polls saying right now about President Trump here halfway through 2025?
Well, it's really interesting because his overall, the average of the polls on his approval rating shows him to be about, with the percentage of the public, equal to the percentage of the vote that he got in the 2024 election. And his numbers look very similar to this point in the Obama second term or the George W. Bush second term, which is, a little bit of half of the countries basically approving him, 45-46%. So that's kind of good news for Trump compared to his typical numbers. Those are really good. Most of his recent career in politics, President Trump has had much lower numbers. But if you dig inside the numbers, what you find is on some issues, like we've been talking about immigration and immigration enforcement, Trump seems to be doing quite well with the public, but on a whole series of other issues, things like employment, trade, and inflation, the numbers are not so good. A lot of people voted for Trump because they wanted to see progress on those basic economic issues, and many people tell pollsters, they haven't seen the progress yet, and they're becoming somewhat impatient.
All right, John, great insight, my friend. Always appreciate you sharing your morning coffee and insight with us here on WAKR, John, through the years. Thank you for making time for me again today.
You're very welcome. Have a good day, Ray.